Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week I'm talking to Cara Goodwin about her book, Your Authentic Awakening, A Guide to Everyday Spiritual Living. Cara is a certified meditation teacher, a certified Reiki master, and the host of the Soul Elevation podcast with over 400 episodes. Hi Cara, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon. I'm really, really excited to talk to you.
So we're going to be talking about your book. It's called Your Authentic Awakening, A Guide to Everyday Spiritual Living. I wanted to ask, first of all, did you always have a spiritual interest from when you were small? Or was it a thing you were kind of atheist or agnostic, and then there was a particular incident that caused you to seek out spirituality?
What a great question. And I love how you phrased it, because the answer is yes. I know it's an or question, but the answer is yes. It's both. So growing up, I was interested in spirituality, particularly outside of religion. So I did have some religious upbringing, not a huge amount. I mean, we didn't go to church all the time, and there were large periods of time where we didn't go to church at all. But I was always curious about what was going on kind of in the unseen realms. And as I went into my older teenager years, I was really attracted to books that had like near-death experiences, which your amazing book has, you know, captured my interest because of that. What an amazing book you have written on that topic. It's such an expansive topic. But also anything, you know, on angels and those kind of like non-religious experiences that people had, that everyday people had, that definitely drew me in. Now, as I got older, and interestingly enough, before we started recording, we were talking about how you worked in the area I lived in England, which blows my mind because it's this tiny little place.
Yeah.
But when I lived in England for 4 years, and in my experience there, it was a very secular place. Like no one that I knew, I think one person I knew went to church, whereas where I grew up and where I'm from, like it's a lot of people go to church. People in my world weren't really interested in talking about unusual things, paranormal things, spiritual things. And I really respected the people that I was around. And I think I just adopted more of a secular, you know, view on life, and sort of felt that I needed to outgrow on some level. I didn't like sit down and have a conversation with myself, like, let's put these childish things aside. But just nobody was kind of like interested in that stuff. And it sort of rubbed off on me, where I was like, okay, I'm not going to really, you know, I didn't really have any outlet for that, and nobody feeding that side of me. And so that kind of carried on for quite a while. And I wouldn't say I was atheist, but I would say I was more agnostic. And it was more of really a sense that I believed in God. I hoped there was a God, but I felt removed from it. I didn't really feel worthy. I didn't feel that I felt like the people who are connected with God are like the seers, the monks, worthy people. And then I was just kind of a background character, you know, sort of how I felt. And then I had an awakening several years ago that really, when I look back on it, I'm like, I kind of got backed into a corner, I feel like. Because my life just really started to fall apart, and I needed a lifesaver. And so it began with the death of my sister-in-law. She took her life. And that just began a series of heartbreaking tragedies in my world. And so like 3 weeks after Michelle died, My dog died. And then while that was happening, my stepdad was kind of in decline, and it turned out that he needed surgery on his spinal cord, which turned out fine. He's doing really well. But, you know, when somebody's having surgery on their spinal cord, that leaves a lot of questions about what's happening and, you know, how that's a very delicate surgery. So that was very worrying. And it took a while to recover from that. And then as he was recovering from that, my mother-in-law was hit by a motorbike while she crossed the road. So she was obviously in rehab, you know, in the hospital for a long time, for quite a while. And of course, we're grieving the death of her daughter during that. And then after that, my stepmom was in the ICU for heart failure, and she went to the top of the heart transplant list and had a heart transplant, which saved her. But, you know, she was very close to the end there. So all of that happened, it kicked off at the beginning of May, and the heart transplant was U.S. Thanksgiving of that same year. So that's about 6 to 7 months. And that's just in my immediate family. We also had a very close friend, somebody who was a groomsman in my wedding, had a brain tumor while this was going on as well. And he passed away the next year. But I just really lost my compass. You know, the mainstream kind of sailing through the surface of life, which had served me while it served me, really wasn't holding up, you know, as my life was falling apart. And I, you know, as I mentioned, I felt agnostic or unworthy at that time. And I just remember kind of in America, we have a saying of like, you throw a Hail Mary. I can't remember if you guys use that expression.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, the last seconds of a game, and you just sort of throw a huge, you know, you just throw something that like it would be a miracle if it hits and you score points because it's the only way you're going to win type of thing. And I kind of threw a prayer out and talked to God on the way back while all of this is going on, I'm also living abroad with my husband and two kids, my two little kids, elementary school age, primary school age. And so we couldn't even really be with our family very easily as each of these tragedies is happening. You know, it's kind of, we had school and life happening in Italy where we were. And so it wasn't so easy to just pick up and be like, oh, okay, well, I'll be with you in the hospital during the surgery, or I'll come and visit you in the ICU, or, you know, I'll hold your hand while, you know, you're grieving. It was, you know, we were there while we could be, but we also were removed from everything, which added a layer of complexity and pain. So anyway, I was walking back from taking my kids to school, and I just sort of threw out there to God, you know, if you know who I am, I could really use like a lifesaver now. And I had always felt interested in meditation, curious about it. I had tried it, and it would be one of those things that I'd read an article or something about how amazing meditation is. And I would try it, and I wouldn't really feel that I was, you know, my mind would immediately start racing. I would feel that I wasn't doing it, quote unquote, correctly. And I would stop, you know, I would be like, well, I don't know how to do this. I'm not good at it. You know, all those things that we tell ourselves. But when I had this conversation in my head with God, I was like, I have always felt drawn to meditation, but I haven't felt that I know how to do it. So if that really is something that would help me right now, then help me find a way to adopt that practice. And please let it be in English, because I had also gone to some little clinics around town where I lived in Bologna, and they were in Italian, and that just added another layer of complexity to something that I already felt that I wasn't very good at. And it was hard for me to really relax into it when I'm trying to translate it in my mind. And so I was like, I really think it needs to be English so I can go deeper into it and get beyond the language barrier. So it's funny to look back and see how things, you know, how quickly things happened from that point. And I was directed, you know, it was like an expat friend of mine. I'm just, you know, having a little chat with her, and she says to me, oh, my mom, her mom in California mentioned this documentary to me, and it made me think of you. Let me look at my notes. Like, she had to get her phone out and look at that notes. Look at her notes. What was that documentary I thought Kara would like? And so she recommends this documentary called Awake, and it's the story of Paramahansa Yogananda, who was the author of Autobiography of a Yogi. And he passed away in 1952, but it was his life story. And I watched it. I mean, my friend hadn't even watched it. It was just her mom talking about how much she loved this that made her think I would like it. And it really activated something within me. And I was like, I've got to know more about this person. I want to learn from this person, even though they had died long ago. So I read Autobiography of a Yogi and just felt that it was opening me up to a whole new world. And I managed to find a group who was teaching his meditation techniques online. And that just, everything kind of launched from there, because meditation was really the turning point for me. It still remains a very foundational part of my practice. I'm still very close to meditation, and that's kind of how I, you know, carry forward with my life, how I connect to my higher self and God. But it was my kind of initial breakthrough into spiritual living. But funnily enough, I came to it through a very secular approach, even though anybody who's familiar with Paramahansa Yogananda knows he was very, very spiritual. He was very connected to God. His teachings were very connected to God. I was really interested in more of the physiological effects of meditation, more of the techniques, and more of a right-brained approach to understanding meditation. And not so interested in prayer and the spiritual aspect that kind of came with time. And now that is the most important part for me. And spiritual living, like living from spirit, living with this eye to a bigger picture of what's happening, and connecting with that eternal aspect of myself beyond the physical and the thoughts and the emotions. That's like critical, and that's my leading foot, you know, with my practice now. But that was definitely something that developed over time, and I was resistant to in the beginning.
I was interested in your book. You said that during your first ethereal venture, you passed through numerous realms. So was that during a meditation? What happened there?
So, yeah, in the book, I talk about some of the mystical experiences I've had. And what's really funny is that, no, they don't happen typically. They don't happen during meditation. And I have not been able to really figure out. I feel like I've got some sort of block. They happen as I'm falling asleep, but I'm not yet asleep. So there is a state between wakefulness and sleep called the hypnagogic state. And that's when I believe you go into a delta brainwave state. But that is, if I'm going to have those types of experiences, that is typically when they happen. And they vary, you know, of what happens. But the first one that you just mentioned was a very long one. It happened like for hours and hours and hours. And, I mean, I was up in and out of bed. I had gotten up and taken some notes. I was getting water, you know, so it wasn't like, I know I wasn't asleep, but I was seeing clairvoyantly with my eyes open or closed these different realms, like you said. And so it began, well, I shouldn't say that because I don't remember exactly the chronological order, but I think I think it started with color. Like I just started seeing colors, kind of blobs of color. And then those started to organize into like geometric patterns. And then those eventually, and I'll see also like move, like they're, when I say geometric patterns, they're often like very fluid and moving and morphing. And it's like, so it's not just one like geometry. It's this moving, dynamic, ever-changing display. And then it started to get like those kind of merged into these very thin golden lines. And it's as though those very thin golden lines were within the patterns that I was seeing. So it was kind of like the patterns themselves started to dissolve and I could see the structure within them that were these thin golden lines. There was also a sense of kind of rising as what I'm seeing is changing. There's also this sense of rising. So, and moving through, and that's what I'm talking about with the realms. It was kind of like you could, and maybe there's a better word for it, but that's the word that resonates with me where it's like, okay, I'm in one quote unquote realm and it's color. And then I expand a little bit more or I rise a little bit more in my consciousness. And it is a feeling of like rising upwards. And then it becomes geometry. And then I rise or expand a little bit more. And then I'm seeing beyond or within the geometry, these golden lines. And at some point, then those lines that had been kind of the structure within the geometry give way to space. I mean, it looked like I was in space. I could see like just this void, this blackness, but there were like these pinpoints of light within it. And then I had a sense that I was actually observing that space through these windows. And I didn't count the sides. They were either octagons or hexagons. And they had this thin metallic looking framing around them that had these symbols on them, which I would now say were probably light language. I've seen light language written, like written light language, because you can speak light language, you can move with light language, but this was written. And they were symbols that looked like what I've seen of light language. So around framing the windows. And then the experience kept going, and there were many. That's what I mean by realms, where it's kind of like, okay, then, you know, that gives way to another. You know, there was an experience of interacting with time, like time being symbolized, and it was a spiral, and it had all these different levels and layers to the time spiral. But I would consider each of those kind of as different realms. That was kind of how it felt to me.
Well, there's a couple of things there I wanted to ask. One thing is to mention that I've had that thing recently of closing my eyes when I'm going to sleep and seeing patterns and geometric stuff. But that's all that I see. It's happened a few times. But a little thing that's weird about it is I talked to this guy called Steve Neal on my UFO podcast, and he does stuff about alien abduction. And he said that people that he knows in that area have been saying to him they're seeing geometric patterns when they're going to sleep. And it seems strange that people who are having that experience might be having the same experience as you and me.
Isn't that something? That's really funny that you mentioned that, because I had a guy called Alan Steinfeld on my podcast, and Alan has written books on the UFO experience, and he's been a part of that world for many years, decades. And he said, it still makes me laugh, because he was like, I was just explaining a little bit some of the things that I just shared with you and some of the other experiences I've had, because I've never felt that I have been abducted, or I've never really, I mean, I mentioned that I did see out these windows, and that did feel like I was on a craft for that particular time, but I was looking out. I never looked inside it. I don't know why. I probably could have turned around and looked, but I was really focused on the outer, like the space, you know, the stars that I could see and stuff. But he says, I'm not saying you're a contactee, Kara. I'm not saying you've been abducted, but you definitely sound like you have been. And I was just like, okay, I'll take it. I mean, I do feel connected to galactics. Very, very interested. And that's relatively new as well. I was interested in ETs and UFOs when I was a child. You know, when I was a child in the 80s and 90s, it was huge. Like, at least in America, UFO sightings and crop circles, which are in England, you know, of course, were very popular. There were a lot of, but there was a lot of fear around it. And I feel like it's evolved since then, at least in the feeling of how it was when I was a child. But I was interested in it. And then, of course, along with that whole agnostic thing, also came a, you know, I was still curious about UFOs, but I was also a lot more skeptical and kind of I wouldn't say that I definitely believed people for many, many years when they would say that. But, you know, even last night as I was falling asleep, I could feel this very visceral vibration on my inner calves, like the lower leg and in my feet. And it was literally as though they were vibrating. And I thought, okay, there's a good chance that my consciousness is interacting with another consciousness right now. And there is some sort of change happening with my, for whatever reason, with my lower leg. Sometimes I'll feel things like in my feet or in one foot, you know, in my lower legs, and I'll feel these vibrations. But it's almost like there is some sort of device that I can't see that is physically vibrating my legs. This happens all the time. It'll happen in my chakras, like one chakra at a time. I'll feel this physical vibration in that state, not necessarily like as I'm going through my day, but if it takes me a while to fall asleep and I'm in that certain, you know, it's, again, not every night, but where it really feels like there is something. I mean, I absolutely know there is something energetic. I can feel it. I mean, I am vibrating. Certain parts of my body are vibrating, and I can feel it very physically, very viscerally. And so, but I'm in my bed. I've never had the experience of like, oh my God, I'm not in my bed anymore. I'm always in my bed, but I do believe that whether there is something or some things there with me working on me in bed and there, and I can't see them, they're invisible, or whether, you know, part of my consciousness has bilocated and I'm feeling physically what that part of my consciousness is experiencing, maybe on a ship. But I still have that physical orientation within my body and my room. I can't say for sure which or if it's both. I only can say how it feels for me. But it sounds like you have something similar, so maybe you can relate to that.
I've just had that thing of seeing those images in my eyes. It's just weird what was coming up. I wanted to go back to the experience you described just now. Do you think that it was kind of spontaneous and your soul or your consciousness just went wandering? Or perhaps there was something else that was controlling that experience and orchestrated it?
What a great question. I feel that I have a divine team, and I feel that everybody has a divine team. I work with my own higher self, and I ask to be connected with my divine team. I ask for contact, for connection. Now, I'm not necessarily asking for specific ET contact, but for myself, I feel that my divine team includes angels and archangels and ascended masters and benevolent star family. And so I ask for that connection. I ask for protection before I fall asleep as well, so that I'm only interacting with things that are for my highest good. And for that reason, I feel that I can relax into any experiences that I have where I'm like, oh, okay, there's something. Because sometimes, well, oftentimes, I will notice these vibrations and it's not like I feel them starting. It's that I begin to notice that they're happening, if that makes sense. So like with my legs, I was kind of seeing some patterns. I was seeing some lights. I had like visual things that I was focused on as my legs were vibrating. Then I brought my attention to my body and I was like, oh, my legs are vibrating. So there was a whole lot of things happening. I was also like hearing, you know, there were audio things that I was tuning into, but I'm kind of like moving my attention around to notice what I notice. And it's like, it's already, there are things that are already happening that I'm like, oh, my legs are vibrating. Or, you know, what was that word I just heard? You know, I heard some word, it was like Basbend or something. I wrote it down, but it was this word that I'd never heard before. And it came up a couple of times and I'm like, I don't know that word. And I forgot to look it up this morning if it had any sort of meaning. But so I do feel that I'm having help from beings that are not physical, or at least not physical in that experience. Maybe they have a physicality somewhere else, but I feel that they're helping me. And it's hard to say where the initiation is coming from, like if they're initiating it or if I'm initiating it, because I am asking my higher self to activate me and to kind of, you know, bring as much, like the way that I think of it and the way that I ask for it is like bring as much, you know, pure source light into this body as I can hold and let it radiate out and you know, be for the highest good. And so I feel that there are physical manipulations that can happen to facilitate that.
And you talk about the soul exists within the human form as part of your higher self. And you also mention little Kara. So could you tell, who is little Kara and how does she relate to the higher self?
Yes. So I kind of level set in the book what I mean by different terms, because there are different lineages and these things we can use. Different people will use different words for the same type of thing, or they'll use the same word for different things. And so I tried to clarify, like, whether you agree with this or not, this is how I understand it. And then now we can move forward with the book so that you understand what I mean when I say like higher self or little Kara or the soul. Because the way that I see it is the higher self is it encompasses this physical life, this human existence, but it also encompasses other lives that I've had, whether that's here on earth in different times, in different places, and also in other places, in other realms, in other planets, other systems. And so all of those lives then, you know, feed into the same higher self. But then the higher self has these fractals of itself that I call the soul. And the soul is specific to each incarnation. So this soul that's in Kara is, you know, not, it's one fractal of that higher self. And then a different, you know, what we could consider like a past life would be a different fractal of the higher self. And they all go back into the same higher self after death, and they come from the same higher self, but they're not the exact same soul, if that makes sense. So I call, just to kind of keep everything straight when I'm talking about these different experiences, It's like the little Kara is like my ego. You know, we might think of that more as the ego, where it's tied to my human life. It's associated, it encompasses my personality. It's part of this human body. And so there are experiences in the book that I, the mystical experiences I talk about, where I'm connecting with what I call, you know, Kara, like the big Kara. But what's funny is Kara is my birth name, but Ka and Ra are both ancient sounds. And they're, you know, you can go back to Egyptian times and they have meanings and things like that. So in the especially the first mystical state that I talked about before, because that one went on, I haven't told you everything to do with that, but there was a point where I was this huge light, a huge, like bigger than our planet, much bigger than our planet. And I, that to me was like, Kara. And, you know, my name, but like the big Kara. And then I could see this tiny little pinpoint of light that I was connected with. And it was like tiny from that perspective, but I was connected with it. And that was little Kara. You know, it was kind of how I thought of it. That was my ego. That was this human incarnation. So they're connected. And the little Kara is an expression of the big Kara, you know, and I just kind of say that, like, I don't really think that's the name of that. I don't even know if it would have a name, but that is just kind of a tongue-in-cheek way that I identify or differentiate between the two.
Have you ever wondered what happens after we die? In my new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, I share 30 incredible stories of people who were clinically dead, some with no heartbeat, no brain activity, yet returned with knowledge that was later verified. These accounts challenge everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. It's available now as an ebook, paperback, and audiobook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other good bookshops. Again, it's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife. And I hope you check it out. And you say, as you expand your awareness, it seems like the universe starts to deliver messages. Or is this like when people say, oh, it's a sign, or is it something different?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great question. So yes, as we expand our awareness, and I talk about this in the book, like, in using the metaphor of a box, like if we're holding a box and what we believe and we think is possible fits in that box, and anything that we reject, that we're like, nope, that's not possible. I don't believe that. That's outside of our box. So if we go back to my story, when I was more agnostic, what fit in my box were more material explanations for life. And if you were to talk about like ETs or God or, you know, your religious beliefs, that was outside my box. I wasn't going to, it didn't fit into my paradigm at that time. And so expansion is that our box keeps getting bigger. It's like, oh, I didn't used to think that that was possible, but now I have this more expanded view of reality and that can fit into my box. So when I'm talking about, you know, feeling my legs vibrate, there might be people who are like, nope, that's not possible. I've never experienced that. And I can't imagine that anybody would experience that. You know, it's just outside of their box. And there might come a point that for whatever reason that starts to make sense for them. And then their box gets a little bit bigger. And so synchronicities, which would be that, those kind of recurring patterns or signs, as you say, as our box gets bigger, we start to understand reality in a different way. We start to see that there is more going on. We start to accept that there is more going on than what we're fed in the mainstream, than what society is telling us, what we learn in school, what our family is probably reinforcing, what the media reinforces. You know, which is a very materialistic view that We can trust what our five senses tell us. And if we're taking insights from anything beyond the five senses, then it's not real. And, you know, we have a lot of scientists right now who are challenging the existing paradigm, the existing materialistic paradigm. But science on the whole, you know, there is a paradigm there too. And, you know, so there are definitely people who, if it's like, if mainstream science is not going to validate what people experience, you know, then they're going to reject it. They're not, it's not going to fit in their box. But my experience and many people's experience has been that as our consciousness expands, as our box gets bigger, we start to notice synchronicities or patterns, these repeating things happening. And examples of that. So I have a mentor. I've had a mentor for several years. And he's also a friend. And really at this point, he's more of a friend. But he, we would talk about some very specific things like quantum physics types of things. He would use words I'd never heard of before to explain things. He's like Mensa smart, you know, he's like, you know, an engineer by training and very, very smart. So he would bring these scientific concepts into the metaphysical experiences I was having or into just whatever we were discussing. And they were very, very specific. Again, words I hadn't been familiar with, I hadn't come across. And then I'd start reading something from, you know, a book that was written decades ago that he has no idea I'm reading. He's never read it. And it starts saying exactly what he just told me. That happened over and over and over again, where I'm like, I have so many pictures in my phone where I would text him and be like, I cannot believe that my eyes are coming across this exact thing that we were just talking about that was brand new and mind-blowing for me, you know? And I had similar things where, you know, I was reading once like a Rosicrucian's book, and they were talking about something very, very specific. Again, like something I hadn't come across before. And then I was reading something else that was written decades later by somebody who was not related with that organization, not affiliated in any way. And there's, again, like saying the exact same thing. We can find this even like in music lyrics where we're having a problem and we feel that we know the next step, you know, or that we need a message from the universe. And a song we've heard a million times comes on and the words ring to us in a new way. And it feels like the answer is there. And then maybe we go to a diner and we hear the people behind us in the booth talking, and it's relevant to our problem. And, you know, they're not even talking to us. They have no idea what we're talking about, but we're getting a message because we're in the right place at the right time, paying attention to the right thing. So these things are happening, and I think that they're happening for everybody, but it takes an expansion of consciousness for us to notice it and to accept it, you know, rather than just be like, oh, that's a coincidence, or we don't even notice that it's happening. Even though I'm tuned into it, I'm sure it's happening way more than I'm able to even notice. You know what I mean?
And also there's that thing of, you may spot it and you think that's a sign, that's maybe a message from the universe, but you also, what is the message? It seems so kind of symbolic and subtle, can't work out what it's trying to tell you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the universe speaks in symbols. So it's, you know, often we're not literally told, you know, step by step what to do. And it's because we're the ones taking action, right? So we might just get like a clue of a direction to move toward without knowing what, you know, exactly how to do it. And in that case, we can either ask our team, you know, ask God or higher self, whatever we feel close to, for clarification or for another, you know, confirmation. But, you know, we have a lot of creative freedom here. And the purpose is for us to express ourselves, not to necessarily, I mean, I love channels, the channelers, you know, I love to listen to people who channel, and there's definite value in that, but we're not here to live for another entity all the time. You know what I mean? Like, we can sure allow entities to express through us for messages that are beneficial for everybody or for ourselves. But we're the ones that are here to gain the experience and to take action. So we also, you know, we want to let life express through us. So, like, I remember a few months ago, I was sitting at my kitchen table and I started to feel this inspiration come through to host an online summit. And I'd never done anything like that before. And the idea, it literally felt like I was sitting in a sphere. And this idea was coming in, and it was just on the surface of this sphere that I was within. So I had like a vague idea of a possibility of something that could be created. And there were a lot of questions. You know, it was like, ooh, I like this idea, but am I the right person to do this? I have no experience with something like this. Could I pull it off? Do I have the right technology? Do I have the right contacts? Would people be interested in coming to something like this? How would I format it? When would I do it? You know, all these questions that it felt like, oh, I have this idea, but I don't know how to do it. So, you know, maybe it's not for me, or maybe I shouldn't do it because I don't have all the answers to it. But that's how it starts, right? With anything, with your book that you wrote, you know, it starts as an idea. You start to sketch it out. You kind of get the inspiration, like, as you take action in your creation, in the creative process, then more things come in and solidify through the act of following the inspiration. But we may not feel like it's all fully formed right from the beginning. And that's how it's meant to be, because we're an important part of it. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
It's got to be us that's doing it in a way that you get inspiration, don't you? And somebody right. said to me that you look at that word inspiration, it's basically saying in spirit.
I love that.
And they're handing it over to you and giving you nudges along the way.
Exactly. Yes.
So you say in the book, your experience of the external world is a reflection of you. So is there something like that where you have a bad experience that's a reflection of you, or do you mean it in another way?
Well, I have one of the realms, let's say, that I have been in the mystical, metaphysical experiences that I've had has been a mirror realm. And it was all these fractals of mirrors put together to have like a form or something that I'm interacting with in the external world. So let's say I'm interacting with a person, you know, and I am seeing that person. I'm judging what they're saying or what they're doing. But through this realm, I understood that whatever it is, however I see that person, what I'm actually experiencing is a reflection of myself. And so that can change, you know, the reflection can change based on how I'm looking at that person, you know, whether I am looking at them with compassion, with forgiveness, with sympathy, or whether I'm criticizing them. But all of it is actually that under the surface, it's myself. You know, if I'm criticizing them, it's because I'm focusing on something within them that is unhealed within me. And that can be a tough pill to swallow, you know, because sure, if we're feeling loving towards something, then, you know, that's great. Oh, I feel loving toward myself. But we really live in a place where there's a lot of judgment. You know, each of us is constantly assessing and judging. And we kind of move through our world in this dualistic world in a judgment way. So But your question was, when we look in the external, so tell me again, when we're looking in the external and it's and we're not liking what we see, can you remind me?
Yeah, it's kind of that. If the external world is a reflection of you, I suppose there's also this feeling that, you know, if there's people in your life that are really bringing you down, or you're watching the news and there's so many terrible things going on around the world that are really bringing you down, all of that's part of your external world.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, and it's going to affect us as well. So, you know, everything is, nothing is like just one thing or just one way. So what we are taking in from the external is informing our inner state as well. So like you say, if we're watching the news a lot, that we're taking that in through our eyes, into our nervous system, and in through our ears, into our nervous system. And it is changing. It's changing us. It is informing our perception. It's informing how we perceive others. It's informing how we perceive ourselves. So it's both and, because as we do this healing work within ourselves to feel more joy and to have a higher experience, to be the love that we want to experience, we will recognize when we're engaging with something that doesn't feel that way, such as the news. You know, the media is not, the media is using fear, and fear hijacks us. It's very, very powerful. If you want to control somebody, fear is very effective. And media outlets know that. They're doing that intentionally. And so as we kind of go through this journey of holding a higher vibration, being a higher version, literally vibrating at the molecular level at a higher rate, so that we can have a fuller, more positive experience in this human form, we will recognize the things that make us feel down, that make us feel negative, that make us feel hopeless. And we will begin to actively avoid those types of things. So, for example, turning off the news and spending time with people who uplift us and who don't constantly bring our attention to what's wrong with the world, so that we can have a higher experience moment to moment as we go through life.
And your book's very much about this. Raising yourself, is it raising your vibrations or your frequency? And one of the things I liked is that you had that experience where you saw a time spiral, and you kind of touched one part of it, and you saw an image of a girl who was 9 or 10 years old. Can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, so this was that first experience that we were talking about before, where, you know, went on for hours and hours, and I was in different realms. And so one of the realms that I lifted into, I was looking down on this spiral, and it had all of these different levels to it. It almost looked like a bunch of skyscrapers that were in a spiral formation, because some were taller than others and some were lower. And they weren't really buildings, but that was kind of the aesthetic, you know, that you can think of. And I understood that where my focus was at any particular point is what I would experience in this time spiral, because the spiral is just full of experiences. And so I could kind of connect with where I was during that experience in time and space to be like, okay, those are the experiences that are, or that's the experience right there that I'm having right now. And I thought, well, what happens if I jump over to the left? And so just with my consciousness, I just brought my awareness to another part on the spiral, and it happened to be on my left side. And I kind of quote unquote arbitrarily jumped, you know, it wasn't like show me a different life or show me, you know, anything. I just was like, what's over there? And I moved my awareness to that part of the spiral. And as you say, there was, I just saw this girl who was, you know, a young girl, and she was standing in front of like a manor house. And it felt like it was Britain, Great Britain, and maybe Scotland. And there was like this gray stone, stone as in like, you know, when the houses are made of like rocks.
Yeah.
So it was like that. And it was very like square looking. And she was standing with a horse, and she was by a big tree. And there was like this heavy gray sky, like very cloudy, low clouds. And I just was like, oh, there's another person over here living in a different life in a different time. Cause it also felt like it was maybe the 1800s. And I didn't really get any insight in terms of like, is that a parallel life of mine? Is that like a past life? Is that me? You know, but in a different, you know, a different experience. I assume, like looking back, I assume it was another life of mine, just because it was part of the same spiral. But I don't know. You know, I didn't get that level of insight. I was just kind of like, oh, okay, I get it. And then I kind of left the spiral and was like, what else is out here?
Did you feel that that was a kind of indicator that time doesn't exist and that everything's happening in the same moment and that there is no past or future?
Yes. And I had heard that before. I had heard in the, you know, in learning about quantum science and what they're learning in those studies, that time, and of course, like the sages have been saying this for eons, that time and space are an illusion. And I had accepted that as a concept, but I couldn't really wrap my logical mind around it. It was just kind of like, oh, okay, I guess after I die, that'll make sense, because that makes sense in the spirit realm. But seeing time symbolized in that way, I could understand it, that you could be kind of above the experience of time, because I was looking down on this time spiral, and it was like anywhere you focused your attention within that spiral was accessible now. So just like you were saying, you know, that little girl was in a different time and a different place. She was in the 1800s, but I was there witnessing her now. Well, this was a few years ago, but at that time.
Because it kind of links to something else you're talking in the book about, multiple planes of reality or multidimensional realms that exist simultaneously, and that perhaps there's a Kara in all of those different places.
Right. Yeah. And that can get very time, that can be, get very mind bendy. But, you know, any point when we think about, we have a choice point. There are theories, quantum theories, that say that at any choice point, you have made both choices. And so you have, you know, an example that I have given is when I lived in England, you know, it was a really hard decision. Do I move back to America? That was always our plan, to live in England for a couple of years and then move back to, or well, for me, back to America, but for my husband, it would be for the first time. And the longer we stayed, the harder that decision became, because we had friends there, his family was there, we were both working there. And it's, you know, England is an amazing place. It's really, really beautiful. And I loved it. But I also, you know, we wanted to start a family, and I wanted to have a family near my family. And, you know, there were advantages to moving back to America as we were raising a family, but there were also disadvantages. So I have, even way before I ever like awakened to any of these concepts or started meditating or anything, I would say, I wish I had the ability to do both, that I could have moved back to America and stayed in England and do both at the same time. And it's kind of, that's the concept of timelines where it's like anytime you have a choice point, you actually do both. So there are versions of you living these other choices that you've had, and you're only aware of one track.
I've heard of people who are in comas having this kind of experience when they come out of the coma and say, "But I was living another life that's just as real as this one on another earth, but it was a bit different." Or they say the life they were living there was years ago, or perhaps a short time in the future.
Wow. I mean, yeah. Isn't that fascinating?
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called Your Authentic Awakening, A Guide to Everyday Spiritual Living. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
It is. It hopefully will be available for pre-order on Amazon soon. It comes out on April 21st. You can pre-order it on Barnes & Noble. And you can also, if you're not able to pre-order it still on Amazon, because we're trying to work that out, you can go on my website, which is caragoodwin.com/book, and you can get a sample of the book there. You can just sign up, and then you can, through the signing up, I can let you know. I'll have your email. I can send you an email when it actually is available on Amazon. Or again, you can pre-order through Barnes & Noble. Or if you're in the continental U.S., you can get a copy now. I can ship it to you. But that's only within the U.S. And you can order it on my website, caragoodwin.com/book.
And can you tell us about your podcast?
Yes, thank you. I host the Soul Elevation Podcast, and it's been going since 2018. I'm over 400 episodes in, having amazing conversations about consciousness. And Simon, I know you'll be a guest soon. I can't wait to have you on. But yeah, all kinds of amazing guests. We talk about consciousness and the soul and energy healing and paranormal things, UFOs, all kinds of, you know, the quantum, and lots of amazing discussions that we're having over there on Soul Elevation. So you can get to all of those episodes on soulelevationpodcast.com, or I'm on YouTube. Lots of ways to find that content.
Fantastic. Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. This has been so much fun.
This week, I was talking to Cara Goodwin about her book, Your Authentic Awakening, A Guide to Everyday Spiritual Living. A great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get exclusive access to the extended episodes. For $3 a month, you get access to an extended episode every month. And you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife, or click on the patron button on my homepage at pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, is now for sale across Amazon worldwide, and you can get it at other bookshops like Barnes & Noble. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.